accession number 14588, reel 2.
I don't know what really happened, but it all went quiet, and we just managed to turn around and get out. And I think we lost about 4,000 feet, and we came out through the rear. And I know we had quite a few holes in us, but we were very lucky that night, and we returned to base quite happily. Now the other trip I remember was one night we went to Stuttgart. I did about six or seven trips on Stuttgart. It was an eight-hour trip. And on the way home, everything was very, very quiet, and we were talking away, and all of a sudden, the skipper said, Lucky Wright said to the navigator, Jimmy, how long before the enemy coast? And Jimmy was there for about a couple of minutes, and he turned and he shouted through. He said, well, I reckon it'll be about 10 minutes. And I should think we've been flying along, you know, looking down, and not a thing, you know, everything was quiet, because you realised the fighters were around when everything was quiet. And as we were, and I think about 10 minutes, and all of a sudden we must have hit the enemy coast, and there was this one blue searchlight, and the gun fired, and the piece of shrapnel came right through at the second pilot on his back. But anyway, we managed to skipper put the nose down, and we came out over there. We got away with it that night, so we were very lucky that night again.
Did you always occupy the mid upper?
I used to change around some nights with my other gunner. Bud Gill, he was a Canadian actually, but I'm sorry to say he died now, but yes, I used to do some nights with him, like coming home or something like that, and we'd change around and have a break.
So sometimes you went into the rear?
That's right.
Which did you prefer?
I didn't really worry actually. I mean, you were out on a limb actually, on the sitting right out on the tail there with the in his rear turret, but you know, it was, you got used to it. You know, you used to have the longest ride, I think.
Which was the colder of the two?
They're both very cold. I remember one night I was over Berlin, and the temperature there was 24 below. And you were really cold. There was no. All you had was, you had three pairs of gloves on, a pair of electric ED gloves and a pair of gauntlets. It was impossible to manipulate your guns, actually. I mean, you get your finger between the triggers, but if you had any trouble with your gun, you couldn't take your gloves off, because if you did, you got frostbite. It was as bad as that. And the archers would come off the wings and hit the side of the aircraft. And
did you ever get frostbite yourself?
No, I never took. Well, I did take my gloves off, but I never got frostbite, thank the Lord.
Did you ever shoot down an enemy attacker during this first tour?
I had a couple of. Couple of hits, and I had a couple of claims. Yeah, one night when we were over the rear.
Can you describe what happened on those two occasions?
Well, we were just flying along, and with this aircraft was coming in on the tail, and we could make out what it was, because we hung on a bit, and then Bud Gill said to me, "I think that's an ME 190." So I said, yeah, so anyway, he had to go, and I had to go, and he happened to pull in over us, and as he was turning off of us, and he happened to turn to the port, and he left himself wide open, and we just had a good go at him, and we did see him smoke and flames coming out of him as he went down, but whether it was clean, we don't know. That was one of the lights, yeah.
What kind of a plane was that?
It was a ME, what was it? I think it was a 190, a Fokker 190.
And the other one?
Well, there was a... Well, this is another case of, you know, mosquito and a 410 used to look practically the same. And you didn't know whether it was a mosquito on your tail or no. And this aircraft, and they gradually came in, and then he started to open up, so we had to go. But see, they were very fortunate. They had .5 stuff, where we only had 303 guns. I mean, it was impossible to fire back at them, you know. But anyway, he managed to do the same old thing, and as he went dive down, we both had a go at him, and I'm sure we got a good hit then that night. That's about only two we got involved in.
Any other incidents in your first tour that spring to mind?
I don't think so. No, I know I crashed on takeoff one day, and I was we'd been to Warnemunde the night before, and
been to where?
A place called Warnemunde in the Baltic. I think they're making V rockets or V1s or V2 stuff, and we lost four aircraft that night. And when we came back, we landed, and the next morning or next afternoon, they asked us out to do a test on an aircraft. For Robert, and they pulled it out, and they started it up, and we got in, and halfway down the runway the aircraft didn't seem to lift. So anyway, we ended up by ploughing in at the far end of Wannington on the Sleaford Road, and it was what had happened was, when they pulled it out, they forgot to screw the port in the leading edge up where all the fuel lines used to go, you know. And that was the cause of the trouble. Six of us walked out of it. We were very fortunate that night, or that day.
In those early days, in that first tour, did you get German intruders who tried to shoot you down as you came back to land?
There was cases, but I know there was cases, but I never came across them.
Not throughout the whole war?
No, I didn't come across them at all. But there was, I know it did happen.
What did you do in your spare time at Warrington?
Well, if you had any time off, which was not very much, I mean, you should go in the bar and have a drink in the sergeant's mess or something like that, you know. And I'd go into Lincoln or to a place called, or just a Warrington just across the road, you know. But there wasn't much to do, in those days. I mean,
so that was your first tour in Lancasters with 44.
Which could consider 38 operational trips. I did 38 trips.
Then what happened to you after your first?
Well, what they did then, you see, they 44 squadron was about one of the first squadrons to get Lancasters, and we were the first. So what they did, they formed a conversion unit to train pilots and all that, so train crews. And then we left there at Warrington, and we went down to a place called Winthorpe, and they called it the heavy conversion unit, 1661 heavy conversion unit. And I was an instructor there for 6 months or more, you know. And
was this in 43?
Yeah.
How did you like being an instructor?
Oh, it's all right, but it's a bit dangerous flying with pilots it come from twin engines, and then you had to train them onto four engines, and I've seen quite a few of the old Lancs lying all over the aerodrome after they've been, night flying and all this sort of thing. and I used to go up some nights and with a great friend of mine, Burness, and I used to pass out the air guns on fight affiliation. You just get like a hurricane coming in at the back with a light on, he'd appear, and he would he'd make attacks on the rank, and I would have to tell them if the boys were doing right by the evasive action they were taking, like turning into them, and we always had to turn into an aircraft. If someone was coming in that way, you'd turn into it, so you make it a bit awkward for them. If you turn that way, you'd be sitting duck.
So you did that for 6 months, and then did you go back onto operations?
I volunteered for 617.
617. Why did you volunteer for 617?
Well, a friend of mine was there, a lad called he was about my bomb member. Anyway, he said, I said, where are you going? He said, I'm going to with 617. I said, oh yeah. Well, I just said jokingly, if you want anybody else, just let me know here. So anyway, next day we had a phone call saying, would you like to come to the squadron? So I said yes. So I went to see the group captain sent for me. He said, what do you want to go on back on operations for? He said, you don't need to. So I said, well, I'm quite interested. So I had to sign this form to say that I would go back, because I'd done a lot of trips at that time. And I didn't realise that I was going to get crewed up with Mr. Cheshire. I got posted to Coningsby when the squadron moved from Scapdon down to Coningsby.
Why did you want to go back on operations?
Well, I thought it was more safer on operations than it was flying in on what do you call it, conversion unit. I mean, you would show off your crew and you know who you were flying with. See my point of view?
Yes.
You've heard that one before, have you?
No, I haven't. Oh,
it was true, actually, because you never knew what sort of pilot you had. But if you had your own crew, I mean, when I was on 44, I never liked to fly with anybody other crew. I don't think I ever did fly with anybody else's crew. But and if you got anybody else's aircraft, it never felt the same. You like your own aircraft, you like your own crew. And you know, it was like you were like one big family, actually, I say all the time.
So you went to Coningsby and met Cheshire.
Yeah.
Can you describe your first meeting with him?
Oh yeah, I went in to see him, and he asked me, you know, a few questions, and said, "Are you interested in coming back on operation?" I said, "Yes, I'm quite interested." And he said, well, he said, have you got your kit around? And he brought all your stuff with you. And I said, well, I have a few things missing. He said, well, he said, you might be on operations tomorrow night. So I said, I just looked and laughed. But it turned out we didn't go on any operations for about a week. And then we did, what was it? Then we started on this low-level stuff. And we tried a lot of training on low-level. Mickey Morley was the gem boy on low level. He was really a good boy, and he taught Mr. Cheshire how to fly low level. And that's saying something. And then we did the the first operational trip we did was the Le Mans, the one that was we're trying to prove a point. I think Mr. Cheshire was trying to prove a point about low-level marking, and you had to get down low and get to these targets and mark them and make sure you were hitting the right target, because, you know, I mean, I suppose you've seen all this on the telly about how many people was killed, indiscriminate bombing and all this sort of thing. Well, this factory was making these engines, Roman Gnome, for this big transport aircraft the Germans had. And we did about four runs over it, and then we dropped our bombs, our markers, I think it was incendiaries, and I was sitting in the mid-opera that night, and we also had on board a camera crew from, I think it was the RAF from Pinewood or somewhere like that, and a squad leader Moyner, he was in charge, and we dropped off. Then the boys came in and bombed it. Well, what we had to do was to blow the factory up, or let the people get out of the factory, which was forced labour and all this sort of thing. And then we had to bomb the factory, leave the living accommodation and the canteen and all that still standing, and just destroy the factory and get out of there. So then when we bombed it and destroyed it, then we flew over there about 20 minutes we took a film of it. I think you'll find this film is in the Imperial War Museum. I think you might have seen it. Have you seen it?
Can't recollect. But
it's there. It's a lot of incendiaries going down. You see the tailwheel and all that. But and when it was all over, what they used to do is the next day they used to show you these films in on the squadron and see what results you did. The same with then we did the Michelin tire factory. There was St Etienne we went to, and we did a lot of these factories. And then we had we got the 12,000-pound bomb, and we bombed the submarine pens, rocket sites we used to do a lot of, and V2s, V1s, and I remember we did when the second front started, the squadron did this operation where they dropped this tinsel and made the second wave of ships going in, like convoy. You had one convoy going one way, and then they worked it out that they dropped this tinsel at certain intervals and made it look like another convoy going into another part. And I think the Germans blew the bridges up so they couldn't get the troops over. And then all the ships were going out with all the goods, the food and the supplies to the Mulberry Harbour and all this sort of thing. The E-boats were coming out of Le Havre and attacking the shipping. So what happened was we had these 12,000 pounders with delayed action on, and the boys, the main force went in and bombed the harbour, and as they bombed the harbour, so the E-boats started coming out, and we dropped these E-boats, 12,000 pounders in the sea, and as the E-boats came out, so the explosion went off, and I expect you'll see this in the Imperial War Museum. There was with the E-boats blown back on the dockside in Le Havre, and
What was Cheshire like to fly with?
I found it was very nice, but I mean, not that we ever said very much, because you know you didn't speak unless you had to say something or something like that. But I found he was a great lad, and I never got into any trouble with him, and he always treated me all right. And but he was a great pilot. And I did say to him once, "Do you ever get scared?" And he said, "Of course I get scared, you know." So I said, "Well, thanks very much, you know. That made my day, really." because he was a man, what I liked about him, he thought about his staff, his ground staff, and his members of the squadron. He was a great bloke for all that, and he stuck up for his members. He stuck up for his squadron.
Did he have a sense of humour?
Oh yeah, I think he had his sense of humour. Yes, I think what was it? I thought you told me you had taped Dave Shannon, and I always remember a remark made, and that was when Cheshire was talking to Dave, and Cheshire said to David, he says, "It's a lovely sunset, David." And David said, yes, not the sunset I'm thinking about, it's the sunrise, sir. And I thought that was a very good remark. I don't know, but he, oh yes, he had good sense of humour. Very good.
Was he a disciplinarian?
I think he could be, but I never come across it. No, I don't think so. But I knew everybody liked him as a CO, as a squadron commander, because as you realise, he was the youngest group captain in the Air Force. And you won't believe another thing, when he joined 617, he was a group captain. And he dropped the rank to go back flying. Now, there wasn't many who did that in the Royal Air Force.
What was he like as an accurate marker?
Well, he proved that, I think, when I left. Why I came off his crew was because he did away with the Lancaster, wouldn't use the Lancaster for marking because it was too crumbly. Why I left I didn't actually leave the squadron, but why he didn't use the Lancasters anymore was because he found that they were a bit too cumbersome and were a lot to hit, really. So he managed to get over some, which he'd been on to Mr. Harris, Air Marshal Harris, for some mosquitoes, and eventually he got these mosquitoes. And he proved that when he did the Munich raid, because I was talking to his navigator, and he went over Munich, and he got in the middle of the town, he put the mosquito straight down, and he dropped the marker right in the middle of the town, and that's how Munich was done. So, and I said to Pat, what was it like? And Pat said, I'm a very eyes. He said, you know, but oh yes, if he meant to do anything, he'd get it, you know. And I think that's what really got him is why he eventually got his VC. But he did well over 100 trips as on operations, because he was a foregrip when he first started off, and he had and he was his first decoration he got was a DSO, and he had the side of his Whitley blown out when he was over the target area, and he flew it home.
Who was Pat?
Pat Kelly was the navigator, my navigator, yeah, on 617. Yeah.
Of all these various attacks that you've just been describing, Limoges and the factories and the E-boats and the D-Day, attacks after D-Day, which one sticks out most in your mind?
I think the Michelin Tire Factory. Because as we went in and marked it, as we were going in, there was somebody shooting at us, and I had a go at him, and I must have got what I wanted, you know. And we ran around again, came in, and we dropped the marker, and the boys came in and bombed it. But we hung around for about half an hour after, and the smoke was about 18,000. So you can tell, well, you know, this tire factory, fantastic. I'd have seen. We could even smell it. And as we were coming, we'd see it for miles as we were coming back, you know, coming home.
Did you shoot any enemy planes down during that second tour?
No, never got involved. Tom McLean, my friend, he did that.
Which of these tours was the most frightening, do you think? The first or the second?
I don't know, really. Bit hard to say, isn't it, really? I mean,
did you have any preference for one tour rather than the other?
I enjoyed 617, actually. It was, you had, you weren't bombing towns and that, you weren't flying high, you were doing individual targets. And that's what I liked about it, really. I think 617 was, and it was the lovely atmosphere of the squadron, good atmosphere. And I think that makes a lot.
Was 617 a very special squadron, do you think, then?
Yeah, definitely was. It formed for one trip, wasn't it? For the dams. And then it went on to... Well, they were going to disband it, and then they carried on, and it took on these specialised jobs.
Was the squadron any better than 44, do you think?
Well, you see, 617 were all experienced pilots. They were very high quality. They were the best pilots. They were actually, I've seen remarks, it wasn't, they were the cream. The crews were the cream, the pigmen. And you'd get an ordinary squadron where they were only doing the first tour or something like that. They were, you know, not like these boys. They were really wanted to fly. They didn't worry about operations, whether, you know. I mean, they're a great bunch of blokes. Mickey Martin, Dave Shannon, Les Munro, and all these sort of people. They're outstanding people. And the crews themselves.
Can you tell me again how you came to leave it?
Leave the squadron? Well, I got taken off a flying, actually. And I was pushed back to Winthorpe as an instructor. Then after a while, as you know, in the 44 odd, things were getting, like, the D-Day was in, and we were beginning to push the Germans back. And I got, with a couple of my friends, made redundant. And we were sent up to Catterick. And we were sent there to have to see, you know, we were taking offline and they were going to be like grounded to do ground jobs. And we were sent there to see, have interviews to see what sort of jobs we would like. But I'm afraid we never got what we wanted, actually, because I would have liked to have been flying control or something like that. I never got that, but I was. Then we went posted down to Crenhill, where we did admin and accountancy, and I finally ended up at North Witham as a station adjutant, which I didn't like at all.
Why not?
Well, I didn't like that. I liked to fly. I was interested in flying.
How many trips did you do with Churchill, do you think?
Oh, I must have been about 16, 17 trips.
So those were your last operations with 617?
Pardon?
Those were your last operations with 617?
No, I went on with... I flew with a lad called Kearns after I left Cheshire for a while. I did about 3 trips with a lad called Kearns. I did the... there was the Seymour Tunnel. I think when the harbour I did with Kearns, and I forget, it was another trip I did. I think it was on the submarine pens. That's about only 3 of them now. I left the squadron. Yeah.
That was with 617?
Yeah.
Was he a New Zealander?
Yeah. Do you know him?
I've interviewed him.
In Terry, yeah. In Sussex.